The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The Patriot is WWTC Minneapolis St. Paul, FM 107.5, K298CO Minneapolis, Intelligent Radio.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Former President Trump was on the step in Ohio yesterday. He blasted the current president.
With his open border policy, Joe Biden has repeatedly stabbed African-American voters in the back, including by granting millions and millions of work permits taking their jobs. The African-American community, the Hispanic community, are going to be the ones that suffer the most. And you know who else? Unions.
Mr. Trump, addressing a big crowd in Dayton, stalled talks aimed at securing an end to the war between Israel and Hamas are expected to resume today in earnest in Qatar. That's according to a couple of Egyptian officials who talked to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity. Hamas is pushing a new proposal for a three-stage plan that would end the fighting. This is SRN News.
Eric Metaxas explains the process with this latest book.
I've never ever felt God calling me to write a book. Now, to some people that sounds loony. I don't know what to tell you, but it does feel to me, I had never felt that feeling before, that I've got to write this in obedience to God, because this is happening now and I need to write this and I need to reach the Christians and the Christian leaders that are capable of being reached.
The Eric Metaxas Show, overnights at 3 on AM 1280, The Patriot, Intelligent Radio.
We all hear the radio ads about the IRS. They tell you to be afraid, to be scared, and they try to frighten you into calling. I'm not here to do that. Tax Relief Advocates is different. TRA is here to tell you that if you owe money to the IRS, whether it's $5,000, $50,000, or $500,000, we have a solution. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in your car, at work, or with your kids, no matter where you are, call now.
800-583-0141.
Don't lose hope. TRA can eliminate or reduce what you owe to the IRS. There is zero risk to you. If we can't reduce your tax debt, then you pay nothing. Our passion is taxes and helping individuals fix their IRS problems. We have a 5-star rating on Google and Yelp and an A+ with the Better Business Bureau. You don't need to be afraid of the IRS any longer. End your tax nightmare today by visiting us online at TRA.com
or call 800-583-0141. That's 800-583-0141.
Tax Relief Advocates. Real solutions for real people.
Retired or retiring soon? How much money do you need to live comfortably? Retirement Planners of America is here for you. Would you like to have financial peace of mind? Here's how. Step 1. Find out the amount of money you'll need to retire. Step 2. Have a plan to get there. Step 3. Make sure that plan can take advantage of market gains but protect you from market losses. Discover how to do all three with a free consultation at 800-508-6108. That's 800-508-6108.
All investments involve risk, including losses. Past performance does not guarantee future results.
Imagine having all the money you need for retirement, all the income, every month, guaranteed. That's Secure Future Investor, an indexed annuity tied to growth in the stock market, but without any risk of loss, ever. It's guaranteed money for life income, no matter how long you live. Call 888-509-2228. 888-509-2228. Sponsored by GP Agency, Inc., Raleigh, North Carolina. Licensed in all states. Performance may vary. Consult with your financial professional before making an investment decision.
The institutions use the markets to create income and get better returns for their investors. They are consistent year after year using tools that most people know nothing about. Learn the skills to invest and trade with the institutions at a free investing class in our local Twin City Center or virtually at 952-814-4410. Discover the tools the institutions use daily at Online Trading Academy, 952-814-4410. Or go to learnwithota.com.
This is Dennis Prager, and now a truly exciting new benefit. My monthly online video get-together for PragerTopia Plus members only. For an hour each month, get an exclusive chance to ask me anything. I'll be answering your questions. I've never done this. Submit your questions for me at Pragertopia.com. This is our chance to connect like never before. Go to Pragertopia.com or click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
Whether you're preparing for a typical Sunday morning or a special holiday service, you'll find an array of helpful, creative tools from Worship House Media. From countdown timers to sermon illustrations, visit WorshipHouseMedia.com. That's WorshipHouseMedia.com, a division of Salem Media Group.
What is dedication?
People ask how your children learn how to ride a bike and you didn't. I just created an environment where they taught themselves, and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
World of Aviation is paid for by Thunderbird Aviation.
Portions of the following program may have been pre-recorded.
It's time for the World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation in Bloomington and by Thunderbird Aviation, with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. Here now is your host, Al Malmberg.
Thanks, Doc. This morning we're honored to welcome back Kurt Brown, who will be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame on April 20th. Kurt not only was a test pilot in the Air Force flying A-10s and F-16s, he was a NASA astronaut flying six shuttle missions. He flew for United Airlines and Sun Country Airlines as well. In 2013, Kurt was inducted into the Astronaut Hall of Fame. And Colonel Brown, welcome back to the World of Aviation.
Hi, good morning, Hal, and thank you for having me today.
It is a real pleasure. What year did you graduate from the Air Force Academy?
Do we have to go into that? You're gonna make me sound old here, but no, I graduated in 1978.
Back in 78, when you were at the Air Force Academy, in your wildest dreams, did you ever think that you'd be flying the space shuttle?
Well, honestly, I can say no. My whole goal getting into the academy and pursuing the Air Force route was to get into fighters and fly fighter aircraft. That was my dream as a little kid, and so I was going for fighters.
We lived in Colorado Springs for a while and used to enjoy to going out to the Air Force Academy and watching the cadets flying the private aircraft in their training, and the gliders, of course. How much airtime did you get in flying when you were a student at the academy?
Well, there's different programs you can go through. It's changed literally over the years. But back when I was there in the mid to late 70s, unless you were a member of the glider club or some of the intercollegiate competition, you didn't get much exposure to aviation, really, behind the stick or behind the yoke. But when you're a senior, if you were pilot qualified, they put you through a T-41 program, they called it, which was a turbocharged Cessna 172. And you would go through your first introduction to military training and flying in the military.
Did you do any flying while at the academy? Did you happen to go up in gliders? I've often wondered what the mountain effect was with gliders being that close to the foothills.
Well, when I was at the academy, I got an introductory flight. I think we got two or three introductory flights to gliders, and they basically did that with all the cadets. So it was a quick flight. We didn't get up a chance to do any real soaring and mountain wave activity and those kind of things. It was just kind of a motivation introduction to flying.
Oh, by the way, I want to mention, before I forget, the banquet, the Hall of Fame banquet, Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame banquet, is going to be April 20th. And if you want to get a table with any particular individual that is going to be at the banquet, you need to get your reservation in by April 1st. And all kidding aside, these tickets are going very, very quickly. The last day to buy tickets for the banquet will be April 12th. But again, if you want to be at a particular table, April 1st is the cutoff. So, Kurt, right out of the Air Force Academy, I want to go back even farther, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Did you have anybody in your life that that motivated you to become a pilot? Anybody in the family? Any friends of the family?
Well, just a little foundation. I grew up in a very small town in North Carolina, and we had an airport. It was a grass strip, had two runways, and growing up as a kid, I always drove by the airport on the way to town, and there was never any activity there. I think there was like one hangar that was a wooden hangar that was kind of broken down, but there was never any activity there. So I didn't get exposed to aviation that way. For some reason, as a youngster, I was fascinated by aviation. I saw on television and heard about, and for some reason I determined at a very young age that I just wanted to fly. That was going to be my goal.
I'm surprised you didn't become a hangar rat in that rundown hangar.
Well, I tried. I actually visited there one time, and they had an air coop in there that they were trying to restore. And it was, I'm not sure it was a good exposure to aviation or not, because it had a lot of work to be done. And I'm going, well, I don't know if I want to fly in something like that. But literally years later, I was driving by that same airport, and I actually saw a couple of Cessnas sitting on the edge of the grass strip. So I had to go over and investigate. So I went over and asked the guys what they were doing there. And they said, well, we're setting up a flight school. We're going to teach people how to fly. And at that moment, I became their first student. And I went back, and my dad owned a hardware store, and that's where I always worked. So I went back to the hardware store and told my father that I was going to take flying lessons. And I think his first comment was, who's going to pay for that? And so anyway, I did, and I started taking lessons. That was my first real introduction to being in an airplane.
You know, being a father, I appreciate what your dad said. How many hours did you fly there in North Carolina before going to the academy?
I had probably, I have to look at my logbook, but I probably had maybe 20 or so. It wasn't that much. I got checked out in the 150 and soloed, and the 172 and soloed, and then they had a 206 that was a complicated airplane by the definition, and so he kind of checked me out in that, and my airport had no fuel. And so when the tanks on the aircraft got down to about a quarter or a third or so, I would take the airplane over to the local airport that had avgas, and I'd fill it up and bring it back. And I got that time as free just for helping them out. So I got a little bit more flying time that way. But literally that was in the summer or the spring of my graduating year in high school. And then in July, I reported to the academy to start my cadet days.
That flying experience that you had in North Carolina, did that give you an edge up at the academy when you decided you wanted to fly in the Air Force?
Well, I'm not sure it gave me an edge up, but it gave me a lot of motivation, because I had I had tasted the candy, so to speak. I saw what it was like, and I still remember that first day that I soloed and lifted off from the grass strip and saw the grass departing below me, and I'm kind of going, wow, I got to come back and land this thing. But after doing that a few times, you know, it gives you such confidence, and I knew at that moment that that's what I wanted to do the rest of my life, was to fly.
Did that motivate you to get great grades and put yourself towards the top of the class so you could what you wanted to go into, you'd be selected for that?
Well, I wish it helped more than it did. I was in a small town in North Carolina. I went to a county school. My graduating class was about 200, and high school was easy for me. I'm not sure they challenged me enough, but it was really easy. And I had probably very poor habits when I went to college. And when I got to the academy, my first semester there, it was overwhelming, really, between the military training and the academics. And I wound up on academic probation. And I tell kids this a lot, because it happened to me, and it kind of blew me away. But I wound up on academic probation my first semester, and I went home for Christmas, and I was pretty down, because, shoot, I might get kicked out of here, because if I don't get my grades up. But I talked to friends and family, and went back to the academy and talked to my instructors and got some advice and got organized, basically. And with their help, the next semester I was on the dean's list, and from then on I was on the dean's list. So it was just trying to get me refocused and get me organized. And but after that, again, my whole motivation was to do good so I could get a pilot slot upon graduation.
You know, that's an incredible story, Kurt. And I've got a feeling that when you tell, maybe high school kids that story, they relate to that. That's a motivator to hear something like that coming from you.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, and literally it scared me to death because, you know, I did good in high school and I went to the academy and I was the first guy in my county ever to go to the academy. And so I had a lot of hometown support, but I felt like I was kind of letting them down. But again, mm-hmm. through some help of friends and instructors and family, I got refocused and found my way, and it all turned out quite well.
Kurt, we're going to take a break. We're speaking with astronaut, airline captain, Air Force jet fighter pilot, Kurt Brown. And you're listening, by the way, he's going to be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame on April 20th. You're listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, where I learned to fly, two locations in the metro, Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie, and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation. A commercial airliner cannot take off without the signed flight release of the captain and a dispatcher. That is how pivotal the role of a flight dispatcher is. Being a flight dispatcher is an incredible career, and Academy College in Bloomington offers an FAA-approved flight dispatcher course. This course is an intensive 10-week course that covers regulations, meteorology, aircraft systems and performance, and so much more. The dispatcher course at Academy College will help you excel in this field. This FAA-approved course is recognized by all the airlines across the country. Class size is limited for a healthy student-to-instructor ratio. For those who qualify, this program is eligible for the application of VA benefits. Academy College is located in Bloomington at the crossroads of 35W and 494. For more information, visit Academy's website at academycollege.edu. That's academycollege.edu.
Packages start at $29.99 a month with signed agreement. Restrictions apply. Speak to a representative for complete offer details. See Vivint.com for license details. Terms and conditions apply.
Homeowners, if you're looking for the best in home security and smart home technology at a price you can actually afford, we have great news. Now you can get Vivint's award-winning home security systems starting at about a dollar a day. U.S. News and World Report has recognized Vivint as the best professionally installed home security system of 2022. And right now, you can get Vivint's home security technology for about a dollar a day. Plus, get free professional installation from a licensed technician. Protect your home and loved ones for as low as a dollar a day. Call right now for your free home security consultation.
800-901-5563. 800-901-5563. 800-901-5563. That's 800-901-5563.
Over the next couple of decades, the aviation industry is going to need hundreds of thousands of new pilots. This is a tremendous opportunity if you've ever thought about being an airline pilot. Al Momberg here for Academy College of Aviation. Through Academy College, you can earn a 2 or 4 year degree in business or aviation. Academy College offers career-specific courses that will help you advance in your chosen field. If you're looking at aviation, you can enroll in the commercial pilot, aviation management, or the FAA-approved dispatch course. No matter what your current circumstances, you have the ability to attend courses in person or virtually to fit your schedule. Academy College offers small classes, hands-on instruction, and a competitive atmosphere to ensure you graduate with the knowledge necessary to compete in your chosen field. Reach your dreams and live up to your full potential with a degree from Academy College. Start by emailing admissions at academycollege.edu. The next quarter begins April 8th. You're listening to The World of Aviation. Kurt Brown is our guest. Graduated from the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs in 1978. Then he went to undergraduate pilot training at Laughlin Air Force Base, where you you started flying the A-10. Kurt, the A-10 Warthog. First of all, how did you get the name Warthog?
Well, let me correct you a little bit here. I went to Del Rio down there at Laughlin Air Force Base in the in pilot training, which where we flew the Cessna T-37 and then the Northrop T-38 as the primary trainers for the Air Force. And then I wound up at Davis-Monthan out in Tucson learning how to fly the A-10. But the A-10's nickname, the Warthog, I don't know if you know what a warthog is in real life, but you don't really want to mess with them. They're not very pretty to look at, and so that fit right into the A-10. It had a lot of firepower. You didn't want to mess with it. And one of the A-10 jokes is it was so ugly, it didn't fly. The Earth just repelled it. So he had a reputation of that. But, no, the good old Warthog, it's a good aircraft.
Did you enjoy flying that? And what was it like to fly?
Well, I did very much. It's a straight-wing aircraft. It's very honest. And the first time you fly it, you flew it because they had no two-seaters and they had no simulators at the time. So really the first time you flew it, you got in the cockpit, the IP instructor pilot stood on the ladder and watched you go through your pre-start checks. And then you started it up and he went and jumped in his aircraft and you taxied out and he would chase you around the pattern and out to the area to do your aerial work. But it's a very honest airplane, but that was the beginning. And then you get into weapons employment where you got to shoot the gun and then drop weapons and stuff. And and I make a joke about it. A lot of air-to-air guys, you see like Top Gun and stuff, they talk about, there I was and I shot you down and all this stuff. Well, in the A-10 world, when you shot the gun at a target, they had sensors that would track how many hits you had. And when you dropped the little practice bombs for your bombing competition, they had sighters that gave you exact scores. So it wasn't anything that you could make up. You had exact scores and exact counts of the rounds that hit the target. And that proved to yourself whether you're good or not. So it's a great aircraft.
The Gatling gun that they have on the A-10, is it similar to the Gatling guns that our warships have today? Are they the same thing?
Yeah, very, very much, very similar. It's a Gatling gun. By definition, it's got seven barrels. They rotate, and as they rotate, it loads the rounds. And a percussion on the A-10 is percussion firing, a firing pin just like your rifle or shotgun. A pin would hit the shell. It would set it off and exit the barrels. And then as the barrels came back around, it would take the round out and put it back in the drum where the round came from. They would put the casing back in the drum. And by that time, another round's already in the chamber. So it's very slick. When I was flying the A-10, we had a high rate and a low rate. Basically, 4,200 rounds a minute was high rate, or 2,100 rounds a minute was low rate. And typically, we did like a one-second burst. So if you do the math, and high rate, that's about 70 rounds a second. And it was pretty impressive.
That, you know, I heard a story one time on board a ship, a warship, and this guy was saying that their Gatling gun was so accurate that when they would do the target towing, a plane would tow the target,
right,
and that the Gatling was so accurate that it would hit the target and would start going up the cable. Do you think that is true? Is it that accurate?
Well, I really can't speak for the Navy's the way they employ their gun. Excuse me. But the A-10's Gatling gun was very, very accurate. It has a high degree of rifling in the barrels, so the round comes out spin-stabilized. And literally, we train to shoot a target 2 miles away. And you could hit a target 2 miles away quite easily, and they would not even hear the airplane coming. It was that accurate.
Over the years, there have been so many times that the powers that be in Washington, D.C. have tried to get rid of the A-10, but the ground troops loved it, and the people that are flying the plane loved it. Why have they continually tried to get rid of the A-10 Warthog? I've never understood that.
Well, I have to be honest. I don't want to get into politics, but I think it's basically politics. The A-10 has proven itself in the Gulf Wars. It was tremendous. And, you know, it's an aircraft built for a certain scenario, a certain environment. It's not an aircraft that you can put in a high-threat environment, really, with a lot of surface-air missiles and stuff, because it is relatively slow compared to some of our fast movers. But it has a weapons that can stay around for a long time, and they can really deliver the punch that's needed for the Army on the ground or the troops on the ground. And so for a perfect example, in my opinion, I don't know if you remember back a year or so ago, Ukraine was being invaded, and they had this column of Russian equipment on a road that was, they talked about it was many miles long or so. And I guess because of the environment, they couldn't go out in the fields because they would sink, so they're on the road. And I tell you what, if you had two four-ships of A-10s, you could go in there and take care of either end of that convoy, and after that, all that equipment would have been destroyed. So it's a good weapon, but, you know, everyone likes to have something new, and the politicians, again, I'm not trying to get into politics, but I think they like to provide new funding for aircraft so that their constituents, you know, in the local areas have more jobs and make more money. So, but the A-10 is a good aircraft. It's been improved over the years, and it's still quite a force to be dealt with.
You have any idea how many are flying today that are still being used actively in the military?
There is a squadron down in Moody Air Force Base in Georgia. I think there's probably 25 aircraft there, and then some of the guard units, reserve units, are still flying them. But Davis-Monthan on the Tucson still has a squadron that does A-10 instructing, and then another squadron that uses A-10s as forward air control aircraft, like they used to use the O-2 and the OV-10 Bronco and that, those aircraft. So it's not that many. The rest of them are in the boneyard, in they call it the MAS deck there in Tucson, where they store all the surplus military aircraft.
Personally, I think you ought to ask the infantry if the A-10 should be continually used in support.
Yeah,
I think
totally
I know what they'd say.
Yeah, and over the years, believe it or not, actually when the A-10s kind of first came out, there was a big push by the Army to get the A-10s assigned to the Army and let the Army fly them. And I guess the Air Force was jealous if somebody else wanted it. They didn't want to give it away, so we kept them in the Air Force. And but even today, the Army, I think, would take them. Because it's quite a compliment to their attack helicopters. We used to have a thing called JAT, Joint Air Attack Tactics, and we worked with the helicopters on A-10s so that the A-10s would strafe or shoot their weapons and pull off the target, and then the helicopters would pop up and suppress all the fire shooting at the A-10s, and then the next A-10 would be in. The helicopters would descend back down and hide. The A-10 would do their delivery and pull off, and the helicopters would pop back up. It was quite a little dance that we did with the Army and the helicopters.
Sounds incredible. Is it the F-35 that they've talked about replacing the A-10 with?
That's correct, yep. And I mean, it's a very capable airplane, don't get me wrong at all, but their A-10 is a relatively cheap airplane compared to anything that we're getting nowadays, and it's quote-unquote already paid for, and we have a lot of them. But the 35, well, I mean, it'll be impressive and stuff, but it's a really a high dollar airplane. If you lose one of those, you could have given them 20 A-10s, I think, for the same price. It's a big difference, and it doesn't have the order time. It can't stay on station, the A-10 can, to deliver that firepower.
Top speed of the A-10 versus a F-35. I'm just curious.
Well, there's no difference. The F-35 is supersonic. The A-10, basically, I think it's, I'd have to go back in my manuals. It's been a number of years, but it's about 420 knots or so was the max on the A-10 or so for A-450. But that, the only way you could get that is if you're in a steep dive, so you didn't have to worry about that.
You know, we would see the video during the Gulf War with the tremendous firepower of the A-10. It looked like it was flying low and slow. Is that a wrong image that we were getting?
Well, we do fly low because we use the terrain, the trees, the mountains, whatever we have as cover. So we are trained. Back in the day, I was trained to fly at 100 feet or lower. In peacetime, we train to 100 feet, but in wartime, whatever, you do what you need to do. But we're at 350 knots or so. It's between 350 and 300 knots is kind of what our operating speed is, and that was very comfortable. The fast movers stuff, they're going faster than that. But again, that makes their time to find the target, locate the target, you know, and then deliver the ordnance much more compressed. Whereas A-10, we can find the target because we're not going quite as fast. Our only issue with the A-10 and the speed is, if you do a lot of maneuvering and you're at high altitude, you wind up bleeding your airspeed down. And you know, speed is life, as they say, and so you don't want to do that. And we did not have afterburner either, so we couldn't get it back very quickly.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, 4,500 rounds a minute. How many rounds would you carry on a mission?
Well, back in the day, the aircraft held 1,350 rounds, and if you're making a strafe pass and using 70 rounds, or let's say you use 100 rounds, it gives you 13 plus passes. That's a lot of passes. I mean, by that time, whoever you're shooting at either has been destroyed or they've got reinforcement coming, so it's probably time to get out of Dodge. Later on in the program, they reinforced a drum that held all the ammo, and it decreased down to 1,150 or somewhere along there. They put some more bracing and stuff in the drum because, again, the neat thing about A-10 is we don't drop anything on the troops. In other words, if we're flying over the Army shooting out in front of them to help them with ground support, we don't drop rounds on top of their head, or we don't drop shells. Mm-hmm. The other aircraft back in the day, the F-4, the A-7, so forth and so on, the F-16, all those rounds got expended. The shell casings were expended outside the airplane. So you could damage a helicopter, you could damage someone on the ground.
Sure. What was the caliber of the Gatling?
It's a 30 millimeter.
It's
a pretty big round. The shell itself was almost a foot long, and the only part that departed the aircraft was about as big as your little finger, and that was the either HEI, they call it, high explosive incendiary, or the depleted uranium round, which is the API armor piercing round. And we always flew with a mix of those, like 2-1, 2 HEI to 1 API, so that we could use the gun for thin skin armor, Jeeps and APCs, armor personnel carriers, or if we had tanks, we had enough armor piercing to hurt a tank. So
incredible. Kurt, we're going to take a break. Kurt Brown is our guest. He'll be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame on April 20th. Offer tickets is April 12th. If you want to sit at a specific table with any particular individual, April 1st is the cutoff. You can go to the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame website and order your tickets. You're listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at the crossroads of 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, two locations in the metro, Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation. This is Al Malmberg. Scenic flights are a delightful way to experience the beauty of the Twin Cities area. Book a scenic flight from Thunderbird Aviation. You'll see stunning views day or night as you fly over the Twin Cities. Go over beautiful Lake Minnetonka, cruise over the state capitol, and circle over downtown Minneapolis. You can even experience an evening flight and see the lights of the Twin Cities. You can even fly over your home, but don't forget your camera. For more information, visit ThunderbirdAviation.com. Thunderbird Aviation is hiring airframe and power plant mechanics. Do you hold an AMP license? Does your attention to detail and commitment to quality make you a standout? Then you should join the Thunderbird Aviation team. You'll work alongside experienced professionals. You'll be responsible for performing aircraft maintenance, inspections, and repairs, ensuring the highest safety standards are met.
Take the first step towards an exciting future. Apply today by visiting thunderbirdaviation.com/careers.
You can listen to AM 1280 The Patriot on all Amazon Echo devices. Simply ask Alexa to play The Patriot Minneapolis, and you'll hear your favorite hosts.
This is Dennis Prager, and thanks for listening to me on your Alexa device.
Stock and Barrel Gun Club is committed to empowering women through their women's only classes. Gain confidence and safety skills with classes such as women's self-defense and ladies only permit to carry. These tailored programs offer a supportive environment where women leave feeling knowledgeable and empowered. Whether you're a beginner or an experienced shooter, Stock and Barrel provides a welcoming space to build skills, boost confidence, and connect with like-minded women. Take control of your personal safety and sign up for a class today at stockandbarrel.com. That's stockandbarrel.com.
Are you looking for a new job? Come to the Egan Job Fair at the Egan Civic Center on Wednesday, March 20th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Multiple industries and employers from around the metro. For more information, find the event on jobshq.com. That's jobshq.com.
Al Momberg here for Thunderbird Aviation. Over the years, I've had a number of people tell me they would love to learn how to fly and at least get a private pilot's license. Well, it's really easy to get started. Just get on Thunderbird Aviation's website and schedule a discovery flight for just $149. You'll learn how a plane flies. You'll go up with an instructor, and you'll take the controls of the plane and actually fly it. You'll do various maneuvers before heading back to the airport. And if you decide to continue, that flight will go in your logbook as your first lesson. Take that first step by going to Thunderbird Aviation. This is Al Momberg. Scenic flights are a delightful way to experience the beauty of the Twin Cities area. Book a scenic flight from Thunderbird Aviation. You'll see stunning views day or night as you fly over the Twin Cities. Go over beautiful Lake Minnetonka, cruise over the state capitol, and circle over downtown Minneapolis. You can even experience an evening flight and see the lights of the Twin Cities. You can even fly over your home, but don't forget your camera. For more information, visit ThunderbirdAviation.com.
You're listening to The World of Aviation. Colonel Kurt Brown is our guest. He flew six shuttle missions with NASA, airline pilot with United Airlines and Sun Country. And he'll be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame on April 20th at the casino out in Prior Lake, Mystic Lake. And I hope you can join us. What was it like going from the A-10 to the F-16, Kurt?
Kind of like going from your four-wheel drive pick-em up truck to your Corvette. It's a totally different aircraft. The F-16 is, instead of getting in the F-16 and strapping in, it's kind of like you strap the F-16 onto you. The cockpit's amazing. You're kind of refined a little bit due to the G load that you're going to or can get in that aircraft. And, I mean, everything's at your fingertips. You don't have to move your hands to touch switches or do anything. It's all on the stick or on the throttle. So it's an amazing aircraft and a lot of energy, a lot of thrust.
Within 10 years of graduating from the Air Force Academy, if my Richfield High School math is accurate, you're selected for the astronaut program at NASA. That must have been a huge thrill just to be accepted into the program.
Well, it was a tremendous thrill. To be honest, I never expected that. After flying the A-10 for a while, you're always looking for a more and more of a challenge. At least I was. And so I went to fighter weapons school. In the movies, they call it Top Gun, but in the Air Force, we call it fighter weapons school, where you get kind of a PhD into how to employ your aircraft. And then after that, another challenge, I want to be a test pilot. That seemed to be a great role that I could maybe improve the aircraft and make them better for our pilots, employing them in combat. So I went to test pilot school, and then after that, I had all the requirements to apply to NASA to be a shuttle pilot, and everybody in my squadron was applying. There was no way that I was going to get it, but hey, if you don't apply, there's no way. So I applied just to get my name in one of their folders and stuff, and as it turned out, it worked out.
Yeah, as it did. Six shuttle missions. What was that movie where you had these retired pilots, James Garner, Clint Eastwood?
Space Cowboys, actually. And,
Space and Cowboys.
Believe it or not, I was a technical advisor on that movie. They came to the Johnson Space Center back before the movie was released when they were filming it. And we put them into suits. We put them in a simulator. We did all that stuff. We told Clint Eastwood and all those guys exactly how we operated and who did what on the missions, you know, to make it as realistic. They wanted, you know, and then when I went and saw the movie, it was totally different. They just did whatever they wanted to do. It was quite disappointing. My technical direction was zero. So anyway, I got to meet those guys and I tell my wife all the time, if they call me back, I'd like to be one of those space cowboys. Go do it again, but that won't happen.
Yeah, you know, the movie was so funny when they're showing these guys jogging around the track.
Oh, yeah.
I was relating to that, and I'm going, no way. <There's> no way.
Well, I have to be very honest with you. Going to space is really not that – I mean, over the years, the media has made a big deal about being in shape and stuff, but I have to be honest with you. You do not have to be in shape to be in space. I know that's disappointing to a lot of people, but all you use up there is your arms and your hands. You hardly use your legs at all because you're floating. And so it doesn't take a real, a person in real good shape to be there. But obviously you don't want to come down with any health problems while you're up there. So that's why they kind of look at health.
Sure. I would think that the heart is the most important thing they look at, or am I wrong on that?
Well, that's a big part of it. But the funny part about the heart is up in orbit, the heart does not have to pump against gravity. So the heart, it's a break for the heart. It's easy.
No kidding. I had never heard that. You flew on one of the missions with John Glenn, and Glenn was like, off the top of my head, 86, mid-80s, right around there.
Well, actually, he was 77. Yep, he was 77.
77.
Flight.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, you I have to be honest. You got it wrong. Okay. John flew with me. I was a commander, and John was the lowest ranking person on the crew. So we made a big joke about that because everyone says, "Hey, you flew with John Glenn." No, actually, John flew with me. But we all say that in jest or whatever. But
yeah,
he was him and his wife Annie were the nicest people in the world, and John did a tremendous job during the mission. I mean, again, he was 77 years old, and he went through all the physical training that we had to go through, and probably the toughest part that he had to deal with was shuttle egress. Let's say we came in and landed, and my hand and eye skills weren't so good, and we departed the runway, and the orbiter is on its side or something, then we would have to basically climb out the overhead windows and rappel down, and he had to do that in the full entry suit, so it was tough, but he did a good job.
Was it difficult for him physically as a 77-year-old?
Well, he was in very good shape. Don't make any mistake about that. He took care of himself very well, and still, though, he was a 77-year-old and repelling in a suit that weighed probably 80 pounds, so you had 80 more pounds to you, and you have to rappel down a rope and stuff and climb up through a window. So it wasn't easy, but he did a fine job.
Of the six missions that you flew, what would you say the average length of each mission was? Kurt, are you there? Did we lose Kurt?
Oh, now you're back. You just came back.
Oh, there you are. Sorry about that. The question was the length of the missions of your six shuttle missions.
Well, if you put them all together, I think I have 62 days in orbit, six missions. So they're an average of 10 days a piece. Some of them were a little bit shorter, depending on the objectives of the mission. Some of them were a few days longer. My longest mission was just under 2 weeks or so, I think it was, but they were all about the same. Again, I'm an aviator, so I like the going up and the coming down, being on orbit for, like up in space station for me personally, for months at a time it'd be kind of like Groundhog Day, the same thing over and over again. But I like the going up and the coming down.
The going up part, the G-forces, what does that do to your body? And what is the G-force when you're propelled up?
Well, the orbiter, during the launch profile, the maximum Gs that the orbiter would pull were three Gs. And three Gs in an airplane is not too bad. The difference about the shuttle Gs and airplane Gs is the shuttle Gs were acceleration. It's kind of like sitting in your car and accelerating from a stoplight to another stoplight. You know, it's pushing you back in the seat. Airplane Gs, when you're turning an airplane, you know, it pushes you down in the seat, not back in the seat. Yeah. So the shuttle Gs were easier to take. It was, everybody joked, it's kind of like somebody sitting on your chest and you had to breathe. That's about as bad as it was for just riding up there. But as pilot and commander, the two front seaters that were taking care of the orbiter during ascent, you had to remove your arms and stuff. And moving your arms under 3Gs takes a little aiming practice, because you don't get to where you really think you're going to get until you get there, if you know what I mean. You got to really guide your hand to the correct switch. But the other thing is it lasts for 8.5 minutes. So it's not like it lasts for 10 seconds or a minute, but 8.5 minutes of 3Gs is, it's a long ride.
Re-entry. I would think that that was, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've always thought that would be the most interesting point of flight as a pilot, when you're coming in, when you're re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. Are you flying that manually at that point, or is it all autopilot?
Well, part of it's autopilot, part of it's hands on the stick and flying manually. The first initial part, we're up obviously above the atmosphere, and we burn our engines and slow down, and all that's done. We enable the burn, we target the burn, and we figure out how much we need to burn. We do all that manually with the help of mission control, and we push a button, and then the orbiter's autopilot does the burn to slow us down. And then we start our descent into the atmosphere, and that's all done by the autopilot at that time. In training, we have to train to be able to manually fly it all the way down from orbit, which is interesting because the vehicle goes from Mach 25 down to sitting on the runway, so you have a lot of different speed regimes you go through, and aerodynamics change depending on the speed regime you're in. In the hypersonics or hypervelocity, when you're up in the Mach 12, 8, 12 or so, things act differently on the aircraft than they do when you're flying just supersonic or subsonic, so you had to know all that. But we would let the autopilot fly down to about, as soon as we went subsonic, 0.99 Mach, then we would take over manually on the stick and fly her around the landing pattern down to a full stop landing.
Kurt, we're going to take a break. We're going to pick up right where we left off. Kurt Brown is our guest. He's going to be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame on April 20th. Again, the cutoff time is the date is April 12th. To get your tickets for that. And April 1st is the cutoff if you want to have a seat at a particular table with someone. Go on the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame website and order your tickets, and they are going fast. You're listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, two locations in the Twin Cities, Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie, and at the Crystal Airport. This is the World of Aviation. If you've ever thought about becoming an airline pilot, now is the time to jump into this exciting industry. Al Momberg here for Academy College of Aviation, where you can earn a 2 or 4 year degree in business or aviation. The Bachelor of Commercial Aviation program prepares you for a position with the airlines as well as private and corporate companies. Academy College offers flexible and convenient scheduling. Flight training is conducted through Thunderbird Aviation, which has two convenient Twin Cities locations. Academy College offers an RATP-approved program conducted under FAR 141 regulations, which allows a pilot to be hired with 1,000 hours versus the normal 1,500 hours required. That saves you time and money without compromising the high standards set. With their connections with several airlines, Academy College will help you bridge your degree to a career as a commercial pilot. For more information, visit Academy's website at academycollege.edu. The next quarter begins April 8th.
urgent Camp Lejeune settlement message. On September 6th, the government announced it will soon begin providing fast, guaranteed settlements to Camp Lejeune Marines, families, and civilians. Awards will range between $100,000 and $550,000, with an option for higher amounts. If you or a loved one spent time at Camp Lejeune and suffered cancers of the bladder, liver, or kidneys, leukemia, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, Parkinson's, or kidney issues, you may qualify for compensation and could be paid within 60 days after accepting your settlement, with your VA benefits fully protected. You may be entitled to a significant financial award for your Camp Lejeune claim, but you must act now. Call the James Harris Law Camp Lejeune helpline now to get the compensation you deserve. We're already fighting for thousands harmed by the water at Camp Lejeune. Call now or you may forever lose your right to be awarded a settlement between $100,000 and $550,000. For your free evaluation, call 800-320-7171. That's 800-320-7171. 800-320-7171.
A commercial airliner cannot take off without the signed flight release of the captain and a dispatcher. That is how pivotal the role of a flight dispatcher is. Being a flight dispatcher is an incredible career, and Academy College in Bloomington offers an FAA-approved flight dispatcher course. This course is an intensive 10-week course that covers regulations, meteorology, aircraft systems and performance, and so much more. The dispatcher course at Academy College will help you excel in this field. This FAA-approved course is recognized by all the airlines across the country. Class size is limited for a healthy student-to-instructor ratio. For those who qualify, this program is eligible for the application of VA benefits. Academy College is located in Bloomington at the crossroads of 35W and 494. For more information, visit Academy's website at academycollege.edu. That's academycollege.edu. You're listening to the World of Aviation. Kurt Brown is our guest. Flew 6 shuttle missions with NASA, and Kurt will be inducted into the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame on April 20th. That'll be held at the Mystic Lake Casino and Convention Center, and tickets are available. Cutoff date is April 12th. If you want to sit at a specific table, April 1st is the cutoff for that. Kurt, your reentry. As pilots, we look at approach. We look at approach speeds, whether you're going to be in the pattern or not, if you're coming straight in. When you're doing the reentry in a space shuttle, what speed are you flying at that point? And if you can give us an idea of what that approach is like. And when I'm talking about approach, I'm thinking back. I think it was Alan Shepard, who was the first U.S. astronaut to go into space. And I remember reading a story, and I don't know if it's true or not, but he said he looked out the window and all he said was he saw a red glow or flames or something of that nature. What were you experiencing when you were coming in on reentry, and what speed?
Well, we entry is quite a unique aspect of the whole shuttle mission. You're going basically where your orbital velocity is, so you're just under 18,000 miles an hour, which is basically about 5 miles per second. And so if you think how fast that is, then you're going to have to slow down so that you can land on a runway. As we descend into the atmosphere, that speed interacts with the upper atmosphere and creates heat because, you know, just friction. And you get you actually get a big glow around the vehicle. They call it plasma. It's basically high energy particles or the atmosphere that you're heating up, and it creates this plasma. And if you look behind you where you've been, you can kind of like a tail of a comet. You see the plasma behind you flashing and popping and doing quite unique things. But that phase happens early as you get into the atmosphere, and the shuttle is built to withstand that heating on the bottom. So for pilots, we're at 40 degrees angle of attack of our flight path, and again, the computer is controlling that, but we can fly it manually. The way we control our energy state to make it to the runway or not go past the runway is we use bank angle to control our descent rate, because even up in space as we're re-entering, we're generating lift on the wings. And so if your wings level, as you enter the atmosphere, you'll generate lift, and then you actually climb back up out of the atmosphere. You kind of bounce. So we use bank angles. So when we get to the point where we want to capture the entry, we roll 90 degrees to dump our lift, and that allows us to kind of slice into the atmosphere and get more drag. And then by varying our bank angle, we vary how much drag we have, and therefore we manage our energy to get to the runway. Pretty much all that, we're not looking at airspeeds. We're really looking at Mach numbers, which is an airspeed, but we're looking at Mach numbers and altitude for our energy profile. And then we literally wind up over the airport of landing, let's say the Kennedy Space Center. We wind up over, basically right overhead, around 50,000 feet. And so we go over the field typically and enter a kind of a downwind. And at downwind, we're in the 30s, mid-30s or so. And then we turn base, and we're in the upper teens or 20,000 feet. And we turn final, we're like 14,000 feet, but we're only 12 miles from the runway. And then we're aiming about a mile short of the threshold of the runway as we continue our descent. And then at 2,000 feet above the ground, we start our flare, a pre-flare, we call it, where we transition from that 20-degree dive angle and 300 knots. We transition to about a degree and a half to cross the threshold. We cross the threshold about 230 knots, and our targeting touchdown point is 195 knots, and that's 2,500 feet down the runway. And then you just let it roll to a stop.
Just out of curiosity, where you would touch down in Florida, how long was the runway all told?
The runway in Florida is quite long. It's 15,000 feet. And it's 300 feet wide. So some of the aircraft that your listeners fly, some of the short takeoff, you could land literally any direction you want to, because it's 300 foot wide plus the shoulder. So it's a big runway.
But Kurt, can you tell? I'm sorry, go ahead. So, I'm sorry.
But the penalty if you miss a runway is there's a swamp all around there with gators in it, so you don't want to do that.
Do you have gator repellent on board?
We should, but I'm not sure it was packed, but we should.
What can you tell us about the new shuttle that is the future for space travel?
Well, I'm not sure what you're talking about, because there really isn't a new shuttle. We have rockets now. We don't do a shuttle. We have rockets that blast off like we did back in the Apollo, Mercury, and Gemini days. And it goes up with a capsule, basically, and then the capsule comes back down and lands under parachutes in the Gulf of Mexico or wherever they want to land. But the actual flying part of it is kind of gone right now. I personally wish we had a single-stage orbit so you could take off as an airplane and fire an engine, whatever type of engine it is, and go to orbit and then come back from orbit and land on runway again. I, as an aviator, that's the kind of future that I would like. But right now, as they did back in the Mercury days, they used to call it spam in a can. And so now they basically have the astronauts in a capsule, and they just sit there pretty much on comm and have very little to do, because the computer power we have now does everything to get them up in orbit and on the way back too. So it's for an aviator, it's a little depressing when you don't have a stick in your hand.
Yeah. What's your take on private companies going into space? Is that a good idea or not?
Well, I think it is. NASA is really in the research. I mean, NASA's not a commercial operation. It's not a operational business, even though the shuttle became kind of operational, they called it. But it's a research facility where we go up and do research about living in space, going to the moon, maybe going to Mars, that kind of stuff. But with the private companies coming on board, now they can make it more operational. They're doing it to do it over and over again, so to speak, and do the same mission over and over again. And so I applaud SpaceX and Blue Origin and Sierra Nevada. They're coming up, and all those guys to get. I tell you what, the more people we get to orbit, the more people realize what a special place being off the Earth is, and we'll make quite a bit more advances. And people don't realize.
Incredible. Kurt, I'm sorry, but we are out of time. We're going to put you on hold. I'll talk to you off air here. And thank you for coming on the show. It was just an honor. So hang on. Don't go away. You've been listening to The World of Aviation. Kurt Brown, our guest, astronaut, six shuttle missions. World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington, and Thunderbird Aviation. This is the World of Aviation.
World of Aviation is paid for by Thunderbird Aviation.
If you can snap your fingers, you can find this radio station. The next time you want to listen to us, your smartphone is now your smart radio. We're always on. It's as simple as this. Alexa, play the Patriot Minneapolis. That's play the Patriot Minneapolis.
Whether enjoying beauty outdoors or from a room with a view and a fireplace, it's easy to create winter magic in Minnesota. Spend the day trekking through the freshly fallen snow or get in your steps while enjoying some of the best shopping in the country. Either way, Minnesota's food scene keeps you properly fueled for the winter adventure at hand. Get our free monthly travel newsletter and plan your dream trip at exploreminnesota.com. Sponsored by Explore Minnesota Tourism, aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Salem Surround partners with your business to deliver custom digital marketing solutions. Surround your target audience wherever they engage, search, serve, socialize, or review to keep your business top of mind. Learn more at Minneapolis.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.